Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kaiju Carnage. I am your host, Cal the Kaiju Guy. So, what's up, everybody? Good morning. Before I get started on anything, I'm going to get something very, very important out of the way. So, let's go on ahead and say to anyone who listens to this show that has children, and you are a mom, or you identify as a mom, or anything of that nature, happy Mother's Day. Like, you know, a lot of times, you know, people take our, they take their mothers for granted. And I absolutely try not to in every single regard. I know that my mom has sacrificed and done so much for me and my brother growing up. And to this day, after I'm an adult, you know, she is just how she is, you know, like there's no love quite like a mother's love. And, I'm not sure how accurate this information is. It's been probably about a year ago that I looked this up. So if the information has changed, you know, by all means, just let me do so. But moms, mothers out there, if you're ever feeling unappreciated, or if you're ever feeling like you don't get the type of recognition that you deserve and all of that kind of stuff, I want you just to always keep one thing in mind. As far as like worldwide holidays go and all of that kind of stuff, holidays that are celebrated across the world and all of that. Number one is Christmas, okay? Number two is Mother's Day. So, now, like I said, whenever I first looked that up, I'm honestly thinking, I can't remember if that was worldwide or just here in the States or what, but whichever one it was, whether it was just here in the United States or if it was across the world or whatever, just always keep in mind that on your special day where we have set aside for people to show our moms how much we love them and appreciate them and all of that kind of stuff, that you are so celebrated that literally only God is more celebrated than you whenever it comes to those mass holidays and all of that kind of stuff. So don't feel underappreciated and all that. Trust me, you are very, very appreciated. It may not always come across that way and all of that. It's very easy to sit there and feel unappreciated at times. And, you know, that goes as far as like at your job or as a wife or as a husband or anything of that nature. You know, I'm sure fathers go feeling very unappreciated at times and all of that. It is a very normal thing to feel that you are not getting the recognition that you feel like that you deserve. But believe me, you are very appreciated. We love y'all like there's no tomorrow. I know I love my mom. If your mom is still with us, love her. Tell her you love her. Give her a hug. Spend time with her and all that stuff, because you truly do not know what that woman has done for you in your life. I saw something on Facebook one time where it was talking about like it was just one thing. It was saying like things that like a mom has done for you as a child that you take for granted or something. And I can't remember a lot of the stuff, but there was one thing, you know, there's a lot of times like a little kid. Well, there's like the last cookie or the last piece of cake or something like that. And the kid will be like, can I have that last piece? And the mom will be like, yeah, you know, and she'll give it to him and all of that. But I saw something on Facebook that it said she wanted that last piece. But because you wanted it, she gave it to you. And I know that's a drop in the pond, you know, as far as like things that your mother has done for you and all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, just to kind of put things into perspective for a lot of you people that, think, oh, my mom is just, she worries too much, or she this or she that and all that kind of stuff. I think it was for the Olympics. It was a commercial for the Olympics and all of that, and it showed all the competitors in every single sport that they were doing. They were small. They were kids. They were like, 8, 9 years old or something like that. And you're sitting there watching, like, okay, where are they going with this, And then for every single kid that it would show out there competing, it showed a woman up in the stands just cheering them on and being all emotional and all that kind of stuff. And then after they win or something, it pans back to the competitor and they're an adult and all of that. And then it pans back to the mom and it said something like, to your mom, you're always going to be her baby or her kid or something like that. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how old you get. I'm soon to be 36 years old, and I'm sure my mom still views me as that child that she feels like she needs to nurture and she needs to take care of and all of that kind of stuff. And I can absolutely believe it and understand it and all of that. So, for those of you who your mom is no longer with us, cherish the memories that you have of her. I know quite a few people in my life that no longer have their moms with them. My father no longer has his mom. We've been very, very lucky that my mom's mom, my granny, the Choctaw, she's 100% Choctaw Indian, or Choctaw Native American, depending on how politically correct you want to be. But considering I am of that, I guess it's okay for me to say Indian. I don't know. I don't know what the rules are a lot of times. But yeah, she's 100% Native American Choctaw, and I'm not sure quite how old she is. I think she's knocking on 90. And we've been very, very lucky that she's still with us. She's pretty much the cornerstone of our family and all of that. And yeah, but my father no longer has his mom, and I have a number of friends that no longer have their moms. So if your mom is no longer with us, I know that today can be a very difficult day to handle and to go through and all of that, but just cherish the memories that you have. And if you ever decide to become a parent of your own, just know that your mom helped you get to that point. Whether it was good or bad, your mom helped you get to the point that you are now that can help turn you into a better parent. So I just wanted to give a shout out to the moms, the mothers out there, and all of that that take care of children, that have teenagers, that if the kids are grown and already out of the house, to the moms out there that, it's more of the four-legged kind, what are they called? Fur moms, or something like that. I know that like dogs and cats can be referred to as fur babies, but I don't think I've ever heard someone who like they don't have any kids, but they have the pets and all of that kind of stuff, like say that they're fur moms or something like that. But yeah, me and Emily have we have four dogs and one cat and a whole slew of outside cats that I take care of and feed and all of that kind of stuff. And she refers to herself as mommy, and calls me dad when referring to the animals and all of that kind of stuff. So if you're that kind of mom, good job. Keep take care of those babies and all of that kind of stuff. And I want to say something. I see things on Facebook where people sit there and this could be kind of a touchy subject real quick, but I see things on Facebook where people will sit there and say like, the audacity of some women that will sit there and say that like, taking care of a dog or taking care of a cat and everything, like, and you call yourself a mom. Like, you're not a mom. That's just a pet. That's just an animal or something like that. You know, simmer down a little bit, okay? You don't know truly what that individual is going through. You don't know what's happening. To sit there and just kind of be like, and just dismiss it like it's nothing. Like, how dare you try to categorize yourself as a mom or something like that. Just keep in mind that the person that has those animals or has those pets might be fighting a battle that you know nothing of. She may have been told by a doctor that she cannot have kids. It's a very possible thing. You know, like, it happens a lot out there, that there are women that want to have kids more than anything, and they can't. And so the closest that they come to actually being a mom is taking care of dogs or cats or other animals, ferrets, you know, other types of pets and things like that and everything. So, you know, don't just write it off like that. Oh, you don't know, like taking care of, you know, an animal or something like that. That's not near the same thing as like being a mom and all that. You know, seriously, that might be all that they've got. So be a little bit more open-minded and be a little bit more mindful that not everything needs to line up exactly how you feel it needs to line up and all of that. Because for some people, that might be just all that they have. And it might be all they're ever gonna have. So just wanted to throw that out there and just be a little bit more mindful of that. but yeah, so happy Mother's Day to mothers of all kinds, shapes and forms and all of that. You are very much appreciated. We love y'all like there's no tomorrow. Keep doing what you're doing. If you feel unappreciated, there's days that make up for it, I'm sure. So, again, happy Mother's Day. Now, I'm sure you guys have noticed that I'm putting out the episode a day late. I would like to say that it's because I decided I wanted to give that very nice, fond Mother's Day message and everything prior to my episode, so I put it out a day late and all that. Yeah, well, that's not the reason. You know, but no, what ended up happening was I had sat down to, and I was taking my notes for the episode and all of that, and like, I had been up since about 6, I've been up since 5:30 this morning, but yesterday I'd been up since about 6, and at about 7 o'clock I hear the bedroom door open and out pops my lovely lady, and I'm like, oh hey, how you doing, you're up early, you know, and all that, and she comes and sits down, and she had gone out with her little gal pals the night before, and so she was telling me how that went, and so I got up and went to go get me another cup of coffee, and she just randomly is like, hey, that cup of coffee that you're getting, that's going to be to go, right? You know, and I just turned back and looked at her, and what are you talking about? Well, we're fixing to go. Where the heck are we going? You know, and she had to be at work at 10, and I don't know if I've ever talked about this or not. She has... at a flea market, she has like a little booth, like a little station where she sells things and all of that kind of stuff. And she sells a pretty good chunk of money that she gets from it. Is she and I both, we flip furniture, you know, desks, dressers, things like that. You know, like kind of redesign them here and there, and like paint them up, make them look nice and all of that. And then sometimes she just gets online and finds somebody that's like, hey, here's a couch that's like brand new in awesome condition and all of that, but I'm moving and someone gifted me another couch, so I'm just trying to get rid of this one or whatever. So it's a full size couch, $75, you know. So Emily's like, oh yeah, you know, so she'll go and buy that couch and then turn around and resell it for, you know, still a pretty cheap price, but for a better price at her little booth and all of that kind of stuff. And that's just what we do. Well, she had to be at work at 10, and since today was going to be Mother's Day, she knew that she wasn't going to be able to get out all that much or anything, and so she was basically like, we need to go pick up various furnitures, like chairs and couches, love seats and things like that. And so I was like, okay, I mean, it was aggravating, but I understood. So loaded up, went and got everything and all that stuff. And by the time we were done doing everything and she made it to work and I had a few, she gave me a list of things to do. And so I went and did that. And pretty much by the time I got done with that, it was like 1 o'clock. And so I was like, nah, I'm not gonna put out an episode. Like, I'm just too much in the routine of putting out episodes in the mornings. And so I'm not crazy about putting them out like in the afternoons or things like that. And so I was like, I'll just do it. I asked her, I was like, hey, we got anything going on early in the morning? We're gonna go out to Hyntston, which is where I'm from. To see my mom, and I don't know if she has any plans to go do something with her mom this evening. I'm sure she does, or something like that, or her sister, because we usually do something with those people. Like, it's kind of like a combo kind of thing. So I don't know how that's gonna go. But I know for sure in a few hours we're going to be going out to Hyntston to visit my mom and all that, and I got her a gift. Just going to go ahead and throw out there, and y'all might think, this isn't the only thing that I got her. But there was this candy back whenever I was a teenager, and it was called Cream Savers. I don't know if you guys remember those or not. Well, they had discontinued them or something like that for a good while, and it was a doggone shame because they were one of the best little hard candies that you could find. Like, I loved the strawberry flavor. And for those of you that's never tasted it or had that type of candy, just basically picture if you've tried the new Dr. Pepper, like strawberries and cream, how that tastes. It's basically a hard candy of that. And you just throw it in your mouth and just suck on it until it's gone, And she was so upset that those little candies got discontinued and all of that. And I've found a few brands here and there that's got a few different flavors that kind of reminds me of them. One of them, the brand is Werther's, and it's coffee and cream flavored because, I've talked to you guys before that I love coffee. I love coffee flavored things and all of that kind of stuff. I'm not your generic, like, order the same thing from Starbucks kind of coffee drinker. Like, I try various different roasts and all of that. They're in the central Louisiana area, unless there's like a very distinct brand of coffee somewhere, like for a small business or something like that, if they have their own kind. It'd be very hard pressed to find a brew or roast or brand of coffee in the central Louisiana area that I have not tried at least once. Like, I wanna try every kind that I can, So it's not a surprise that I like coffee flavored candies. And Blue Bell puts out a very good coffee flavored ice cream, by the way, just throwing that out there if anyone else is big coffee drinkers or anything. But so I saw online one time that Cream Savers were coming back. And so I was like, ooh, okay. Well, I've been hunting for them like in Walmarts and Super Ones and things like that, and I cannot find those rascals anywhere. And I'm old school. It's just because of the way I grew up. A lot of stuff, yes, I know I can just order a lot of stuff online. But at the same time, I'm like, I like to be able to find it in the wild, as we as we hunters like to say, we find it in the wild and all of that kind of stuff. And I wasn't able to find it, so one day I just gave up and was like, I'm done. So I ordered for, I can't remember what, I think it may have been around Christmas time or something. Like, I had gotten her some, I'd gotten her two bags. It was a two pack on Amazon. Came in with a pack of the strawberry and a pack of the orange and cream. And she was over the moon that, I got them back for her. And all that kind of stuff. And so for Mother's Day, just one of the gifts that I decided to get her, I got her, I doubled the order. I got two strawberries and cream and two orange and cream. So she's gonna be set on those little hard candies for for a little while. And I just know she's going to be excited about that and can't wait to go out there and give her the other stuff that we got for her and stuff that I've got for my granny, you know, and all that. And so, yeah. And so, yeah, I've been rambling now for 20 minutes about Mother's Day and, you know, and all of that. But so, anywho, let's jump into it. That's good because, you know, it'll fill out the episode a little bit. But today I'm going to be talking about and discussing the very first kaiju of, like, myth and folklore that I'm going to talk about. And all of that, and that is the Loch Ness Monster that supposedly resides in Loch Ness in Scotland. And for those of you that do not know, Loch is just simply like the dialect of that area for lake and all that. So it's basically Lake Ness. Now, my first introduction that I had to the Loch Ness Monster was whenever I was a kid, I'd say about 7 years old or so. I don't know if they still do it, but I know whenever I was a kid that they had something at schools called the book fair. And I think they still do it, but I'm not entirely sure. But anyone my age will probably remember the book fair, and I probably just brought back some very good memories for you. But anywho, they would just have all kinds of different books and other, like, little collectibles. Like, they had posters, they had little, you know, just all kinds of little things. And me, being the big reader that I was and all of that, I always was very much looking forward to, oh, yeah, awesome, you know, we got some books, let's go see what we got. And so, you know, my mom would give me, like, $5 to go get some stuff and everything. Because, you know, keep in mind, guys, this was in the 90s, you know, a children's book back then costs like, you know, 90 cents or something like that, you know? So, and they didn't, back then, at least for something like that, they didn't charge tax. It was just straight cash and all of that. So, you know, a lot of the books were 90 cents, a dollar a piece or something like that. You can go in there with $5 and walk out with 5 books. You know, that's just how it was. It was a different time. But, so I go in there, and I'm sitting there looking at all the books and all that kind of stuff, and I see one. I can't even remember the name of it, and I have no idea where the book is to this day. But it had a picture of the Kraken on it from Nordic folklore and all of that, you know, the giant squid. And so I was like, well, what is this? And so I open it up, and it was basically just a bunch of tales of different, like, creatures and things like that. And I was already aware of Bigfoot at that point in time. And whenever, like, I opened it up to see, like, what kind of tales and stories were in it, I saw that there was one on Bigfoot. And I knew who Bigfoot was. And there were two dealing with werewolves. I knew what werewolves were and all of that. And so I was like, okay. Well, then I started looking at some of the other things that's in there, and it was like it covered, these were things I had never heard of before. The Mothman, Loch Ness Monster, Spring-Heeled Jack, the Kraken. I had never heard of the Kraken at that point in time. And, you know, just kept on, like, seeing all these different things, and I was like, there was one that dealt with, like, a white, like, demonic tiger that would come in and seek vengeance on people and all that kind of stuff. And it was a really cool little story. It's one of the ones that stood out to me over the years. And so I was like, oh yeah, I need this, you know? So I bought it and went home and read it. You know, there was a story with the Yeti, otherwise known as the Abominable Snowman. And I read the Loch Ness Monster story. And I was like, holy mackerel, there's a whole monster that lives in a lake in Scotland. And, you know, immediately I was hooked, you know, like I'm full on, I'm a believer. Okay, he's out there, she's out there, you know, like, you know, like I was pumped, I was happy. Like, I wanted anything that I could find on the Loch Ness Monster and all that, because I was fully on board with, like, oh, she's out there. Mama, did you know that there's a monster that lives in Scotland, you know? And Mama, being the champ that she is, you know, would sit there and just listen to me ramble about that monster and all of that kind of stuff and tell her everything in the world about it. But that was my introduction to the Loch Ness Monster. And then naturally, as I got older, you know, I would find more books here and there. And there would be some little movies that were made, some documentaries that were made, and I would watch them and all that. And I was fully on board still, like at an ungodly, I was still quite old before I adopted the mentality that I currently have of, is she real? Is she out there? At the end of the day, we're never really gonna know. But I do believe that the vast majority of quote-unquote sightings is 100% due to misidentification and confirmation hunting. And that's just my opinion on it. I'm not saying she's not out there, but I'm not saying that she is. I believe in the possibility that there could be something unidentified that is living in that lake. Is it a monster? Probably not. I mean, what, not, no, probably not to it. It's not. It's just, it's not a monster. It's some form of species or something in there that would just has not 100% been identified, and we just don't know what it is. And so due to folklore and human beings just wanting to come up with something to make a reason for something existing or something like that, they're going to identify it as what they feel like they need to identify it as and all of that. You know, I mean, that's just all it is to it. Why do you think so many sailors way back in like the 1600s, 1700s and all of that kind of stuff had so many tales of like sea monsters and stuff like that, you know? Because they would be going out there into the ocean and they're sitting there sailing. Well, let's just say, you know, for example, the very first people, obviously we know what they are now, but the very first people that ever saw, like, a whale, let's say a humpback whale, okay, had never seen one before, had no idea what it was or anything like that, and then boom, you're just sailing across the ocean and all that kind of stuff. You hear, like, the breath, you know, like, it blow from its, holy mackerel, I'm spacing, this little breathing hole that it has on top of its head, its spout or whatever you want to call it, but, you hear that and you look over and you're just like, you just see this mammoth thing in the water and like, and people's never seen this before. And you're like, what the heck is that? And then like, say it breaches, comes up out of the water and like flops back down and everything. If you've never seen that before, if you've never heard of that before, you best believe you're going to go back and be like, we saw a doggone monster out there. It came out of the water. It had giant arms. It was shooting like smoke out of the top of its head and all that kind of stuff. That's how tales get started. That's how myths get started. That's how folklore gets started. And then years and years and years later, whenever something like that is identified, oh, that's a whale. That's not a monster at all. It's a whale. Well, the people that first saw it don't know that. Can you imagine the first person that ever saw an orca? You're just sitting there, you know, just doing your own thing, and then you see this mammoth black and white thing with sharp teeth with a giant dorsal sticking out of its back that somebody might consider a horn or something like that. You know, a lot of tales of the Kraken, the reason why the Kraken came about in folklore and all that kind of stuff is that people say that sailors likely saw a colossal squid. And obviously, like, exaggerated its size and all of that kind of stuff. But that's what happens. That's how myths and folklore and all of that kind of stuff get started. It's, they see something, they don't know what it is, and they're like, holy mackerel, you know, we don't know what that is. Now, the earliest account that there is of the Loch Ness, not necessarily the Loch Ness Monster, but so a quote-unquote monster or beast in that area was from an Irish monk called Saint Columba. And this supposedly took place in the year 565. And this is pretty much accounted for in a book that was written about a century after this event supposedly took place. And the book was called the Adomnon? I don't know how to pronounce that. But anywho, so Saint Columba, he was an Irish monk. And he and his followers came across some locals by the River Ness. Not Loch Ness, the River Ness. And they were burying a man. And whenever Saint Columba asked, like, what happened? What's going on here? Like, how did he die? They said that he was in the river and he was attacked by a water beast. And he was thrashed around and drowned and everything, and they were able to recover his body. And so they're burying him. So Saint Columba comes up and tells one of his followers, he wants to try and draw the beast out, and tells one of his followers to jump in the river and start swimming across. And so as the man is swimming across, the beast supposedly, like, showed up and starts, like, swimming towards the man. And Saint Columba supposedly gave the Catholic cross and said, go no further, do not touch the man, go back at once. And it's been stated that the beast stopped as if ropes had pulled it back, and then it turned around and fled. And then the follower came back and everything, and everyone thanked Saint Columba for supposedly banishing the beast and all of that kind of stuff. And then that's it. That's just all it was to it. That's the end of the story. And that's the earliest account of some type of water beast slash monster slash creature in that area, kind of. And a lot of people point to this story as, like, the reason why so many people believe that there is a creature that lives in the water around that area. Because it's folklore. Not to mention, not only is it folklore, but it's somewhat of a religious tale. And that gives more credence to it in the eyes of a lot of people and all that. And so, even after the sightings of Nessie really started popping up and all of that, even like the first, like, very renowned sightings started happening and all of that, the people that would supposedly see it and everything, they would say, well, we've known that there were legends of some type of water creature living in the lake for quite some time. Now, is this the same creature as Nessie, like, in this story? We don't know, because there's two different settings. Like, you know, Nessie has predominantly always been, like, she resides in Loch Ness. This story with Saint Columba took place at the River Ness. So that's two different things, you know what I mean? But because it both happened at a Ness, like, they're basically attributed to the same creature. And so that's the earliest account of some type of water creature that pretty much lives in the area. Now, I'm going to talk about things a tad bit out of order as far as, like, whenever it comes to certain sightings and stuff like that. I'm going to jump to, like, the biggest talking point, the thing that so many people believed for decades that ended up being a hoax. And this is called the Surgeon's Photograph. And the reason it's called the Surgeon's Photograph is because the individual that submitted it wanted to keep his name anonymous. So they wanted to call it something, so they called it the Surgeon's Photograph. Now, the person that ended up taking the photo was an individual by the name of Robert Kenneth Wilson. Okay? And according to his account, and this was all published in the Daily Mail on April 21st, 1934. According to his account, he saw the creature and snapped four pictures. Of the four pictures that he took, only two of them were good, but one definitely did not get the traction that the other one got because it was just viewed as being far too blurry and all that, and nobody really paid much mind to it. But there was one that was considered quote-unquote decent enough to be published and all of that. And it's the most famous photo of Nessie that there's ever been. We've all seen the photo. We know what it looks like. It's that very black and white, kind of like an aerial shot that's kind of looking down. You can see its neck sticking out of the water. Part of its back is sticking out of the water and all of that. It's the single most famous photo of Nessie that's ever been taken. Now, there have been skeptics that sit there and say that the photo, you know, it's very much known as a hoax at this point in time. It's never really come out, like the person that took it or anything like that has never really come out and said, oh yeah, I faked it, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But like, it's after, especially, you know, whenever the photo was published in 1934, they did not have the type of technology that we have today to be able to analyze photos and really look at the photos and all that kind of stuff and everything. Like, you know, you could take a picture like that and just give it to some, to a publisher or whatever and be like, hey, I took this. That's a monster. It's real. And they'll post it and be like, hey, there's a monster living in that water. And here's the photo evidence. And there's lots of people out there that's going to be like, holy crap, there's a monster that lives in that water. You know, like they're going to believe it. And there's been skeptics that like, you know, like some of the excuses that these people come up with for, you know, that it's not Nessie is to me is just as far-fetched as saying that it is Nessie. Like, you know, like there are some people that say like, as far as the surgeon's photograph before, and I'll get to what, a certain tale as to how the surgeon's photograph came about. But skeptics initially would sit there and be like, that's not a monster. They said, that's an elephant. Basically believing that there was an elephant in the lake. And what was its neck and head was actually its trunk. And that, you know, it's the hump was the elephant's back and all that kind of stuff. And you can't help but sit there and be like, so a monster living in the lake is completely far-fetched to you, but an elephant just randomly chilling out like in that lake, that's perfectly acceptable to you? Yeah, you know, because elephants are just walking all up and down, you know, the banks of the river and all that all the time. Yeah, it makes perfect sense that that's an elephant, you know. But it's also been said that it could have been an otter or it could have been a bird. And, you know, like, you look at the photograph and you sit there and be like, how is that an otter? How is that a bird? You know, like I said, like, some people, they come up with certain, they're so determined to be like, I'm so certain that that cannot logically be a monster, that it has to be another animal. So it's got to be an otter, or it's got to be a bird, or it's got to be an elephant. And you sit there and be like, you're so on one end that can't be what it is. You don't realize how ridiculous it sounds that you're trying to argue that this thing is an otter or a bird or something like that, you know? So like, and I'll get to some of that more later on. But, so a number of reasons have come out as to why they believe that this photo was 100% a hoax. Because one, now that they're able to analyze the photos better than what they are, they look at the ripples around the water. I mean, around the object. And they have deemed the ripples to be far too small. Like, you can tell that it's a small object. It's almost as if it was something that was just placed into the water, a photo was snapped of it, and then, you know, it was like right there. And they're like, oh, look, here's the monster. And like, whenever you look at the scale of it and all of that, they're like, eh, you know, the ripples are way too small. And they've determined that the thing that's in the photo was only somewhere along the lines of like 2 to 3 feet long. And back in 1975, there was a article that was written for the Sunday Telegraph. And it pretty much accounts how the photo was faked. And basically what happened, there was an individual by the name of Marmaduke Wetherill. And he worked for the Sunday Telegraph. Someone had decided to play a prank. And they put some footprints in the mud or something like that. And Mr. Marmaduke happened to come across them. Saw them, like, took plaster molds of them and all of that. And was like, oh my God, here is evidence of the monster. It's here and all that kind of stuff. And then whenever they send the molds off to be tested and everything, it was determined that they were fake footprints. They were actually the footprints of a hippo that was used as like someone just pressing it into the mud and all of that. And so reportedly Marmaduke had gotten ridiculed very, very bad because he fell for the hoax and all of that. And so as it's stated, what actually happened was then he was basically like, okay, you guys are going to ridicule me? Like, I'm about to pull the heist of a lifetime or something like that to pretty much get back at them and everything. And so what ended up happening, according to this source, is that a toy submarine was purchased and they used wood putty to create the neck and the head and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, the guy had like his son-in-law involved and all that, and they made it up and everything. And there happened to be an individual by the name of Robert Kenneth Wilson, the person who ended up taking the photograph, that was a friend of theirs. They reached out to him and said, do you want to partake in this? And it is stated that Wilson enjoyed a good prank. And so he's like, absolutely, I want to take part in this. And so they all go to the lake and they put it into the water. Wilson takes the pictures and all of that kind of stuff. And again, according to this source in this article, that somebody was coming, and I think it had something to do, like it was maybe like the equivalent of like a park ranger, but for the lake. They were coming to basically be like, hey, what are you guys doing? And one of the individuals used his foot to push the little submarine down into the water. It filled up with water and it sank, and it is presumably still in the lock to this day because they couldn't find it afterwards. And so Wilson would go to the Daily Mail, which is where Marmaduke had worked and had been ridiculed by and all of that. He goes there, submits the photo, and was like, I want to do this anonymously. The Daily Mail, that had ridiculed Marmaduke for the fake footprints, ends up posting the picture and like, here is the photo evidence that we have of the Loch Ness Monster. Not knowing that they had just basically been gotten back for ridiculing him, that like, you guys just posted a hoax as fact. For decades, people believed this photo was real and that it was the absolute best, strongest, hardest evidence that the monster was real and lived in the lake. Now, it was this article in 1975, the one I just said about from the Sunday Telegraph, that basically detailed how the hoax came about and all of that kind of stuff. That's pretty much the earliest account of it coming out that, like, no, the photo is fake. You know, it was all done as a hoax, as a prank, and all of that kind of stuff. Here's the thing. That did not get worldwide attention until, I believe, it was 1994. Okay? That means from the time that this photo was put in the Daily Mail in 1934... we'll say the mid-90s, all the way up to the mid-90s, the worldwide public was very unaware that this photo was a hoax, even though that article had come out in the mid-70s saying it was a hoax. This is how they did it and all of that. Not everybody was able to, you know, they don't get to see that same article. The media was entirely different back then. You know, it's not like today where you can just post something and in a matter of minutes, it goes viral to where millions of people have seen something. It was not like that back then. And so, yeah, it was not until the 90s that it really became a widespread thing that the photo is a hoax. And so that's crazy that this guy posted this in the 30s, and it took 60 years before it was finally disproven. And so for the longest time, that photo was like hardcore for sure evidence that there is a monster living in the lake. Now, after the photo was purchased, posted, there were many other accounts that then very quickly started to come out. And I'm not going to talk about all of them, but I'm going to talk about some of them. Now, one of the more famous ones was from an individual by the name of Aldi McKay. And this happened May 2nd, 1933. This was actually before, mind you, the photo was taken and posted and everything. But some accounts like didn't start to come out until after very widespread attention was being brought to it and all of that. But this one was actually talked about before the photo was published, and it was in a magazine or something like that was called the Inverness Courier. And she basically just described that her and her husband saw something in the water kind of rolling around, writhing around, and all of that kind of stuff. And this was the first article, from what I can see, from what I can tell, this was the first article to actually coin the term monster, that there was a monster living in the lake. Then there was another individual by the name of George Spicer. I can't remember, I forgot to write down the year that this happened and everything, but he claims that he was driving his car and this mammoth creature came, crossed the road, and it had an animal in its mouth, and it was heading down to the lock, but it was a pretty good distance away from him. And so by the time he saw it, you know, he came to a stop and was like, holy crap, what is that? And then after it had passed on, he drives up to kind of see if he could see what it was, and it was gone. And he presumed that it went into the lock. And according to his description, even though he was a pretty good distance away from it, it was about 4 foot tall, and he would guess to be about 25 feet long. Now, pretty much what led to even more widespread acclaim is that after the photo was taken, okay, there was an individual by the name of D. McKenzie that came out and said he couldn't quite remember if this happened in 1871 or 72. But after the photo had come out, he was basically like, I can confirm that there's something in the water because I've seen something in the water, but it was a number of years ago. And he told the story of he saw something in the water, but he originally believed that it was either a log or it was an overturned boat. And it started moving very, very slowly. Then after a while, it just took off, going very fast and submerged under the water. And then he never saw it again. And he took this letter, like he wrote it in a letter, and sent it to an individual by the name of Rupert Gould. Now, Rupert Gould was an author at the time and all of that. And whenever he got the letter, he became very, very fascinated by the idea of the Loch Ness Monster. And so he actually went to the lock and he started collecting evidence and conducting interviews and things like that, and was basically like, tell me your story and all of that. And so he actually wrote a book that was called, I believe it's called The Loch Ness Monster and Other Things, or something like that, something along those lines. And that was the very first like major book publication of the Loch Ness Monster. And once that book was published, due to the photograph being taken, it pretty much became a worldwide phenomenon. There were expeditions that were done to go to the lake. There were people that were camping out around the lake for weeks at a time, snapping any photos or any pictures that they possibly could to try and see if this thing was real. And every little thing that they would see, you know, even if it was just like a piece of driftwood or, you know, an overturned log or some type of animal or something like that, they would just see a disturbance in the water, snap the photo or take a video. There has been some videos that have been shot, and they would be like, there it is, that's the monster, because they're confirmation hunting. And confirmation hunting is basically like you're so determined to find an answer that you're looking for that anything that you see is evidence for that answer that you're looking for. And then anything that kind of contradicts that answer that you're looking for, you immediately just write it off. Ah, no, that's fake. Or no, they take that out of context or something like that. You know, basically the idiocy of moon landing conspiracy theorists that believe we've never been to the moon and all that. Yeah, that is absolutely a jab at you people. And if any, like, I have very, very, very little respect for moon landing conspiracy theorists. I have even less respect for flat earthers. If you believe the earth is flat, you're dumb. I do not care if that offends you. You're dumb. Okay. So, but I use them as an example, one, because they're dumb, and two, because they look for anything. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, like, what photos has been taken to show that the Earth is round. It doesn't matter what evidence have been projected that the Earth is round and all of that kind of stuff. And all of these worldwide scientists and organizations and things like that will absolutely sit there and say, the Earth is round. The other planets are round. Here's the thing. Flat earthers believe that other planets are round because they have been observed to be round. See, you can't reason with these people. They're stupid. But, you know, and, yeah, like, can you guys tell that these guys tick me off like there's no tomorrow? But yeah, like, that all of these worldwide organizations and all of that kind of stuff will come out and be like, oh, the Earth is round and all of that kind of, and everything like that. And they'll just be like, ah, nope, you're all lying, you're all in on the secret, and you know, this and that, blah, 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 and all that kind of junk. But then here comes old Joe Blow, you know, that's a Redditor, that does an experiment in his garage or something like that. And it's like, there it is, I just proved that the Earth is flat. And every one of them just starts clapping their hands. Bravo, bravo, this guy who has no training and no expertise whatsoever. You prove that the Earth is flat. You know, that's how they are, because they're stupid. And one other thing about flat earthers, they're stupid. Just throwing that out there. Have I made my point yet? Have you guys picked up on that? Flat earthers, they're stupid. Okay, just throwing that out there. If you're a flat earther and you listen to my podcast, I sincerely hope I just ticked you off to the point that you never want to listen to me again, because you're an idiot. Okay? And that's all I've got to say about it. But anywho, so yeah, there people confirmation hunt whenever it comes to the Loch Ness Monster. And there have been a number of expeditions that's been made going out into the lake and all of that. Like I said, people camping out for weeks at a time, taking photos and videos and all of that kind of stuff. And there's been a number of photos and videos that's been taken over the years. And many, 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 many of them have absolutely been discredited, especially because, like I said, with technology that we have today, and we're able to analyze photos and videos much better and clearer than we ever have been able to before, they can really come out much more and be like, this is absolutely a fake. Or this is absolutely a log. You know, there was one where somebody had taken a picture and it looked like something that was in there, and they were like, oh, that's the monster. And then they analyzed the photo years and years and years later, and they were able to clean it up real nice, make it much more clear looking, and then zoomed in, And there was absolute confirmation that like it was just some other animal. I can't remember what the animal was, but it's like, no, there's its face, there's its head. Like that is this type of animal. You know what I mean? But is the Loch Ness Monster out there? I don't know. At the end of the day, nobody knows. We'll never know. Like I said, I used to be a diehard believer in it. Much more, up to like I was a lot older than I care to admit that I was still a diehard believer in the Loch Ness Monster. But now I'm much more of the mind of, was there something in the lake that was could not be identified at the time? Yeah, I believe so. Now, is it a monster? No, it's not. It's just not. It's some species that was out there in the water that we were never able to quite identify in all of that. But yeah, there was something out there. We just don't quite know what it was or anything. You know what I mean? I mean, there's been legends of something in that lake for years and years and years, and at the end of the day, you know how they say, every myth at some point in time is based on some bit of truth. So now, has that truth been grossly exaggerated over the years? Probably. Absolutely, I would say so. But now, so what is out there? We don't know. There's been some expeditions that's been done as far as like using sonar and stuff like that to try and see if they could catch anything on the sonar and all of that. And there's been numerous expeditions. There was one in particular that was done that as they were going across the lake, they say something that was of a pretty decent mass, like was following the boat and keeping pace with them for a pretty good while. And the depth that they had measured it at was like 400 feet deep or something like that. And then after a while, it just kind of, they just lost the signal, like it had gone away or something like that. And some skeptics have gone on to say, oh, it was just a school of fish or something like that. But, then other people are like, why would a random school of fish see something that's like way above it in the water and just decide, I'm going to follow you and keep pace with you the entire time that, like, it's going and all of that kind of stuff. So, take that as you will. There's been expeditions where they've towed cameras behind the boat, and they've taken pictures of things that kind of looks like flippers or like a tail or something like that. But skeptics will say no, like that's really just air bubbles or something like that. But then diehard believers are like, that is absolutely a flipper, or that is absolutely a tail. And there was one, I believe it was in 2019, they did like some kind of DNA testing on the lake where they got lots of different things to where they could like water samples and stuff like that, and tested like what kind of DNA was in the water and all that kind of stuff. And they found, a lot of explanations for like misidentification would be like, well, that was an otter or something like that. And due to the DNA testing, they never found otter DNA in that was in the lake or something like that. Now they found a bunch of eels. They say there was a lot of eels that were had DNA in the lake, and that maybe a lot of the identification of what people presume to be the Loch Ness Monster was actually an eel kind of swimming up on top of the water. Possibly one of very abnormal size, but they don't know. There was no reptilian DNA that was ever taken due to the DNA samples and all of that. And so you would then have to sit there and be like, well, if there's no reptilian DNA, or that would mean that Nessie would not be a reptile, it's something else or whatever, But then you also have to keep in mind to where, like, if there was something living in the lake, that it would either have to have gills so that it could stay underwater for long periods of time, or You know, I mean, that's just all it is to it. Like, it would have to have gills to stay under, because if it had lungs and required air to breathe and all of that, it would have to come up for air multiple times throughout the day. And, you know, the creature's not going to come up and be like, okay, let me just barely stick my head out of the water so that, you know, nobody sees me, or, you know, it's going to do what it's going to do and all that, you know, and it would come up, take a breath of air, and then go back under. I mean, that's just all it is to it. So at the end of the day, who knows? You know, we just don't know what is out there. And you know, because they say, I mean, what is it? They say that they're like 70% of the ocean or something like that is completely unexplored. It's a very high number. And so at the end of the day, and we discover new species just about on a daily basis. And find species that were like, oh man, this thing has supposedly been extinct for 300 years and we just found it. So, you know, at the end of the day, who knows? Who knows what's out there? Who knows? Especially whenever it comes to the oceans and all of that kind of stuff. I've told you guys before that it's not that I'm a believer. It's that I'm very fascinated by like sea monsters and things like that. But you know, you have to sit there and wonder, like, what is a monster? Like, a lot of people just simply hear the phrase Loch Ness Monster and then will sit there and be like, I can't believe that you believe in that, like that there's a monster living in the lake. I mean, it's not an actual monster. It could very well just be a regular animal, something that lives in there and it's never truly been identified. And so we've always stated, oh, it's a monster that lives in there and everything. I mean, you know, like to quote Jurassic World, the word monster is relative to a mouse. A house cat is a monster. You know what I mean? Like, who knows what it is? I sure don't. And I'm not going to sit there and presume that I do know. I'm not going to say that there's nothing in the lake. I'm not going to say that there is something in the lake. I mean, we just don't know at this point in time. But at the end of the day, it's fun. It's fun. You know, the unknown can be fun to sit there and, like, man, what could it be? Like, to have, like, your own little theories and stuff like that. I know that whenever I was a little kid and, you know, I read that book and I had a few dinosaur toys, and you know, Nessie, the identity of Nessie has predominantly always been given to an aquatic dinosaur, a plesiosaur, I believe that's how you pronounce it. Basically that very long necked dinosaur with four flippers, you know, two in the front and two in the back and all of that. That's pretty much what most people think Nessie is, or what Nessie looks like, and all of that kind of stuff. And so I had a toy of that type of dinosaur whenever I was younger. It was a very small toy. It was only like 3 or 4 inches long or something like that. It really wasn't all that big, but that immediately became my Loch Ness Monster toy. That was no longer just a dinosaur. That's Nessie, you know. Because that's just how I was. Like, after I saw King Kong, every gorilla toy that I had became King Kong toys, you know? And that's just all it is to it. But it's fun. It's fun to believe and stuff like that. And you know, it gets me whenever people will sit there and say, like, oh, I can't believe that you actually believe in that and all of that. And it's like, you know, what harm? What harm is it? Let them believe. Let them think that there's something out there. It's not that big of a deal and all that. I mean, you're getting bent out of shape of people thinking that there's a monster in the lake. I mean, there's people out there dumb enough that think that the earth is flat. So, yeah, I brought it up again. And no, I do not care. I've gotten into so many arguments with flat earthers. They're probably some of my least favorite people on the face of the planet. And again, if you're a flat earther and you listen to this podcast, I hope I ticked you off, and I hope you stop listening to me because you're a goober. But yeah. You know, there's nothing wrong with believing that there is some kind of creature in the lake and all of that. You know, like, people just, you know, they want to believe in, like, folklore legends and stuff like that. Like, I'll use Bigfoot as an example. I'm much more, I don't want to say that I'm a believer, but I'm much more of a believer in Bigfoot than I am the Loch Ness Monster. And that's not me saying that Bigfoot is absolutely out there. I've described it one time, like, because Emily, she said something one time about, like, can you believe people think that Bigfoot is out there? And I was like, oh, he's out there, you know, and she turned and looked at me, and it was, like, very early in our relationship, and I could see that she was kind of, the gears were turning in her head to where she's like, do I want to keep this relationship going and all of that, and, but she's embraced it now. She knows that I'm a fan of Bigfoot, that I have, like, magnets and stickers and stuff like that of Bigfoot. My coffee mug that I'm drinking out of this morning has a picture of Bigfoot on it, and next to it, it says, I believe in Bigfoot. But, you know, I've put it before. I've told people, like, if they ask me, like, do you really believe in Bigfoot? And I'm like, I don't 100% believe in Bigfoot, but I do believe in the possibility of something like Bigfoot being out there. And yes, it is very, very possible that the legends of Bigfoot and all of that have been chalked up to nothing more than misidentification, just like the Loch Ness Monster and all that. I've had debates with, I've got a friend, I'm not going to mention his name, but I've got a friend that he's a diehard believer in Bigfoot. Like, oh, they're out there, you know, this and that. And they live in families, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And like, he's one of those ones, like, he goes to the conventions and all that kind of stuff. And he meets these people that have supposedly been hunting them and tracking them and all of that. And he was telling me this story about this guy one time that says he has been following, or he had been following, a family of Bigfoot for about a year. And he had, like, found one of their nests, and, like, he took pictures of the nests and all this kind of stuff. And, like, well, this is how they were, and this is how they acted and everything. And just me being the guy that I am, even though I do believe in the possibility of Bigfoot being out there, I looked my friend dead in the eye and I said, where's his pictures of Bigfoot? And he's like, well, he doesn't have any. I said, so he's tracked these guys for a year, and he's seen them. He has seen the way that they've interacted. He's seen the way that they are in, like, the family hierarchy and all that kind of stuff. He claims to have seen all of this, but instead of taking pictures of that, he took pictures of their nest. And he was like, well, you know, like, they're smart. They know that people watch them, and they know that whenever the camera goes to come out and this and that and everything. I'm like, hook a body cam up, one that's, like, in your pocket. And, like, you know, there was always an excuse for it and everything. But, you know, that's just the guy that I am, where I'll sit there and be like, yeah, I believe in the possibility of Bigfoot being out there. But then when somebody starts telling me a story like that, I'm like, hold up now. None of what you're saying makes sense. You know what I mean? And, like, so, I'll go from there. But, yeah, I'm a fan of Bigfoot. I've got lots of things. I've got a t-shirt of a Bigfoot. I've got the mug. I've got various magnets and things like that. Whenever me and Emily went to Colorado to see her family for Christmas 2 years ago, you know, as we got into Colorado, she's like, you know, Colorado is a hotspot for Bigfoot sightings and everything. I was like, oh, I know. You know, and so I got some Bigfoot merchandise and all that while I was up there and all that, because it's fun. It's fun to be into stuff like that and everything, you know, and I've seen various movies and all of that kind of stuff about Bigfoot, but I'm not here to talk about Bigfoot. I'm here to talk about the Loch Ness Monster. And so over the years that everything has happened, you know, yes, there's a lot of people, I believe, that are of the mentality of there could be something out there. And it is mostly misidentification, and we don't know what it is. I don't know a whole lot of people that 100% firmly and genuinely believe that there is either a dinosaur, such as a plesiosaur, that's out there, or a legit monster that lives out there. Just about everyone I've heard talk about it is like, oh, you know, if there is something out there, it's just a regular old animal that, you know, nobody's been able to properly identify yet. And like, you know, that's just what I believe that it is. It's just something out there that hasn't been identified yet. And one day we'll actually be able to identify it. And unfortunately, even after we're like, so this thing has been in the lake. It's presumably been in the lake for years and years and years. And so that could possibly be, or that's what Loch Ness Monster has been this whole time. And there's going to be a whole slew of people, thousands of them, that's going to go, nope, not my Nessie. That's not Nessie. That's just a regular animal. Nessie eats those for lunch. You know, like, it's just, at this point, you're never going to be able to completely convince 100% of anybody that there is not a monster that lives in that lake. There's a movie that I'm going to cover one day that I think is a very good Loch Ness monster type movie, and it's called The Water Horse, and it came out in 2007, maybe 2006, I'm not entirely sure. I've always been a fan of that movie. I've only seen it like twice, and both times was not long after it had come out, but I remembered very much enjoying it and just, you know, liking it and all of that. And so if you have kids and they don't know a whole lot about the Loch Ness Monster or anything like that, and you want to kind of introduce them to the tale and all that, and kind of let them decide if they want to believe or if they don't want to believe or anything like that, show them The Water Horse. It's a good little family movie. I can't remember if it was done by Disney or not, but no, it wasn't, because it's currently streaming on HBO Max, but I own it on my Vudu. So, yeah. So, all right, guys, that pretty much does it for The Loch Ness Monster. Been a fan my whole life, just about, you know, going on, you know, 30 years or so that I've been a fan of the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot and all of that kind of stuff. And this was my first episode on like a kaiju of folklore and all that, even though it's not necessarily a kaiju, but, you know, it is something that's out there. And naturally, because of Loch Ness Monster having the fame that it has, then all of a sudden you have lots of other communities and things like that that's like, oh, by the way, we have our own lake monster, you know, and this and that. There's Champion and Lake Champion and various others and all of that kind of stuff. And it's like, really? Like, none of this ever popped up until Loch Ness had one. Now all of a sudden y'all've got one? Come on now. You know what I mean? But yeah, that I hope y'all enjoyed this. I do plan on covering more monsters / kaiju of folklore in the future. I will be covering the Kraken one day, you know, of from Nordic myths and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, hope you guys enjoyed this. Sorry I didn't go into as much detail as I would have liked, but I mean, I really kept a lot of stuff about it out, like a lot of the accounts and a lot of the sightings and stuff like that, because I mean, they're either easily disproven or it's just really easy to say, we don't know what that was. Like, you know, there are sightings out there that's be like, oh, I was on the bank just looking at the water and I saw some ripples happen. That's Nessie. And it's like, come on. That could literally be anything. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I just didn't talk about a whole lot of the sightings. But, you know, that it is what it is. But, all right, guys, that pretty much does it for the Loch Ness Monster. Again, I'm sorry that it came out a day late, but, you know, it is what it is. I'll be back this Wednesday for the weekly Kaiju Havoc. Next Saturday, I'm going to be covering a film that I've been a fan of ever since I first saw it, despite it getting the bad reception and negative reviews that it got, and I'm going to be covering Reign of Fire, that came out in 2002, starring Matthew McConaughey, Christian Bale, and Gerard Butler. Yeah, I'll go into more detail with it whenever I actually talk about the episode. But yeah, I remember when the movie came out and I loved it. And I went back to school the next day to talk about it. And virtually everybody else that saw it was like, that's one of the most horrible movies I've ever seen. So I've been a diehard defender of this film for years and years and years, you know. But I believe Kid Kong has already covered this film on his podcast. So if you want to listen to what I've got to say about it, just go over to his podcast, which is called Kid Kong at the Movies. Search through his library and find it, and you can listen to that one as well. But, I mean, you can also just listen to his other episodes that he has, because he does a lot of good work and everything, and I've been on a number of them. So even if you just want to listen to the ones that I've been on, but just throwing you guys a bone, when I'm on his podcast, it's a bit more of an uncensored version of me. You know, just throwing that out there. I believe I've talked about it before that in real life, I cuss like a sailor. But for the podcast, because I know that kids listen to this and all of that kind of stuff, I keep the podcast very, very clean and all that. So just wanted to throw that out there, that if any kids want to listen to me and Kid Kong discuss movies, he does not run a clean podcast, and so I do not keep it clean on his podcast. So just always keep that in mind. So, alrighty guys, thank you all very much for all the support and always sticking around. Check me out on all of my social medias. On Facebook, I'm Kaiju Carnage, Godzilla/King Kong Podcast. I have a Godzilla Ultima fan page, and on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, I am Cal, the Kaiju Guy. Once again, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. You really don't know how much we love and care for you guys, and just keep doing what you're doing. See y'all this Wednesday for the weekly Kaiju Havoc, and then we will see y'all next Saturday at the time of this record, a week from today at the time of this recording, for Reign of Fire that came out in 2002. So, alrighty guys, we'll catch y'all next time. This is Cal the Kaiju Guy signing out.